across Wisconsin from Civic Media. This is Up North News Radio. Now, live from our Lake Wissota studio, here's the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Breitlow.
Well, hey there, Wisconsin. Good morning. It's Friday, October 20th. It's another beautiful day to have you here up north. From wherever you're listening, across the Civic Media Radio Network, or the Civic Media app, or by podcast, or all of our social media options. It looks like Facebook live video streaming is working today, unlike yesterday. So you can catch us on several Facebook pages, the Up North News YouTube page, a couple of Twitter feeds. We're everywhere. And it's nice to have you here in the state of Wisconsin Sense. We're going to unpack the news for you coming up. We're going to talk about sports for the weekend. We're going to get a weather forecast, a couple of great interviews. Let's just look at, here's what's on tap this morning. We're going to review last night's remarks from President Biden to the nation about his visit to Israel, his resolve to stand with an ally, while also seeking to end a humanitarian crisis. In the meantime, Congress remains stuck in a rut, while House Republicans bicker over who should be their leader, a soap opera that is delaying important domestic and international matters. We'll talk about that with Courier Newsroom national correspondent Kiev Akil as well. There is a fifth candidate in the third district to run for Congress. The third district is the one represented by Republican Derek Van Orden across western Wisconsin into parts of central Wisconsin. And this week, a fifth Democrat entered the race, hoping to challenge Derek Van Orden. His name is Eric Wilson. He's from Eau Claire. He will join us around 7:20 to tell us why he's running. We will cover this week's media coverage of national and international news with Mark Jacob at 7:30. And then at 7:50, Dan Schumacher's off this week, so Jimmy Koska from Civic Media will be here to get us set for tonight's start of the first round of the WIAA high school football playoffs. So we have a lot in store for you today. Along the way, of course, you can join us anytime at 844-967-2789. Again, 844-967-2789. You can email us radio@upnorthnewswi.com. And again, now that the live video feeds are working, if you're watching us on Facebook and want to make a comment there, put it on screen. We may put it up here on our screen as well. Sam Davison is standing by at the Civic Media World Headquarters at the top of State Street near the Capitol in Madison. Sam, how are you?
I'm doing pretty well. How are you?
Good, thanks. Now, I noticed, again, for the video feed, I've got, you know, on the screen there, it says Pat Kreitlow under me. And for his first few weeks here, it just said Sam under him. And Sam's sharing a last name now, Davison, which I'm now discovering had two S's. And I bring it up just to ask how many times you get asked, well, shouldn't it be Davidson? You know, because there's a lot of Davidsons mm-hmm. out there. And did you ever do any family history or whatever as far as why, you know, where the difference between a Davidson and a Davison? Is it a part of, you know, the world where family comes from?
Well, a lot of people try and spell it Davidson, like Harley Davidson. I've never done any like genealogy stuff. My dad is a little into it, but I don't even know who did it. Some relative of mine, like 60, 70 years ago, did a mm-hmm. huge genealogy report thing. Apparently, it's a Scottish name. Used to be spelled with one S, and then for some reason, they changed it to two S's.
It's funny how different regions, you know, last names have traveled around the world, but yeah, they come out differently. You know, in journalism school, of course, the first thing they teach us is if somebody says their name is Smith, ask them to spell it, because it might be S-M-Y-T-H, might be S-M-Y-T-H-E, you know, names change. And sometimes it's not just the region of the world, but when one of our, you know, ancestors came, you know, through Ellis Island or some other checkpoint, some guy at the border, you know, wrote it down differently, or, you know, that person themselves decided to change it. I have wondered a lot about Kreitlow. There's not a lot of us out there, and I haven't done a ton of genealogy research on it, except for this one thing. I have found how my group of Kreitlows is related to Kreitlows all throughout Wisconsin and Minnesota. It appears that not everybody comes in through Ellis Island, that they came in through the Great Lakes and then, you know, to Chicago and then up through Wisconsin and Minnesota. But there's also some Kreitlows in Iowa. And we've never found the common thread, you know, that they're kind of from the same area of Germany, Poland, kind of in that area. But we're still not sure, you know, where...
How they connect over here, yeah.
How we connect, you know, how did there get to be these two different clans of Kreitlows, and what's their whole story? So I'm always interested in it. And when we were talking about hobbies yesterday, mm-hmm. I absolutely promise you that genealogy is going to be one of my hobbies. Oh, in about 3 years or so here, when I hope to wrap things up. I had yesterday, Sam, my first ever big milestone for me. Yeah. Kind of like losing your first tooth, you know, or your first day of school or your high school graduation. Mm-hmm. I had my first meeting yesterday with a financial planner about retirement.
Wow.
If that doesn't put a few more gray hairs up on top here, I don't know what. But it was just basically to see, you know, are you on track, you know, because, you know, people don't always save for retirement the way that they should. They don't start young enough. And so sometimes you just need to know that I'm not going to be selling apples on a street corner, you know, someday.
That's always nice to know.
Yeah. I can talk. As long as I can talk and I can type, I guess I should be okay, right?
Yeah. You've always got something you can do.
I just want a little bit more time for those hobbies that I keep saying I'm going to have someday. I've left us just a little time to check the temperatures quick here. The cool spot across the Civic Media Radio Network is right here on Lake Wissota, where it's 38 degrees. Madison, you're at 50. Waukesha, 48. La Crosse, 42. Wausau, 49 degrees. Wisconsin Rapids, 47. Green Bay, you're at 50. And Hayward, 40 degrees. Let's take a pause here. We'll do a little bit of sports and unpack the news next. You're up north. We will note the anniversary of Tom Petty's birth coming up a little later in today's history lesson and music break. I was talking just before the break about retiring and, you know, things that you want to do in your later years, whenever those come for me. It's not coming yet. And so then I open up our daily newsletter that you get through upnorthnewswi.com. And one of the stories that they're featured today is 100 things to do in Wisconsin before you die. So I guess I now have the checklist ready for me. We talked to the author, Danelle Gay, and what she wrote. Some things are oddly specific, Christina Laurie writes, like grab a bowl of Booyah at the Booyah Shed. And then there's some obvious things that anybody would list for, you know, doing in Wisconsin before you kick the bucket. It might be a place to go to. It might be some food. It might be camping. So you get a link to that interview and learn more about the book right there. And then there's my newsletter column that comes out a couple of times a week as well, talking about the lawsuit that was filed last week, taking direct aim at the voucher school program. We talked about that with some guests earlier this week as well. But in the newsletter, we give a little bit of background about it, talk about how it was funded in large part through support from the Minocqua Brewing Company Super PAC and the work that our friend Kirk Bankstead is doing with education advocates. So that and more in today's newsletter, and you can subscribe to that newsletter by heading over to upnorthnewswi.com. Click on newsletter in the top banner, and you will be set to receive our note every weekday morning. Let's check sports now at 6:17. Baseball playoffs quickly here. The National League Championship Series is now tied up at 2 games apiece after Houston beat Texas 10-3 last night. The road team has won all 4 games in that series. Game 5 is this afternoon in Arlington, Texas. In the American League Championship Series, Game 4 is tonight in Arizona. All the home teams have won so far in that one, as Philly leads that series over the Diamondbacks 2-1. Packers are at Denver playing the Broncos Sunday afternoon at 3:25. And running down a few select Badger sports for the weekend, the Badger football team plays at Illinois tomorrow at 2:30. You can catch that game on FS1. The women's hockey team, ranked number 1 in the nation, a 6-0 record, and they are home against Bemidji State this weekend. They drop the puck at 7 o'clock tonight in Madison. The men's hockey team is at Michigan Tech. They have a 3-1 record to start the season so far, and that match gets started at 6. And then we've mentioned the top-ranked women's volleyball team, number one in the country, playing number two in the country, Nebraska, in Lincoln tomorrow night at 7, and that'll be on the Big Ten Network. Let's unpack the news now, and if you have any comments or questions about it, feel free to drop us a line at 844-967-2789, or you can email us radio@upnorthnewswi.com. Well, President Biden gave remarks to the nation yesterday. He talked about, and rightly so, being the first U.S. president to travel to a war zone in Israel. And he talked about his trip to Ukraine earlier, the first American president to enter a war zone not controlled by the United States military since Abraham Lincoln. And in both cases, it was to tell the victims of terror that they are not alone and that the United States is an ally and a partner. There was obviously a lot of material in the speech that showed support for Israel, but he also mentioned this. He said, "We can't ignore the humanity of innocent Palestinians who only want to live in peace and have an opportunity." And then he mentioned the terror inflicted on Ukrainian people who also only want to live in peace, but they have been bombed, tortured, raped, taken hostage, maimed, murdered. And the common thread that the president wove through this is if you allow terror to have a victory, they do not stop there. They don't say, okay, everything's hunky-dory. Terrorists don't say hunky-dory. I'm sure Putin never said it. They seek the next target, the next conquest, the next moment of chaos. As Biden put it, Hamas and Putin represent different threats, but they share this in common. They both want to completely annihilate a neighboring democracy. He discussed the alliances of democracies like NATO. That's a group of allied democracies, which I hasten to add, Donald Trump did everything he could to undermine it, potentially destroy it, and give his buddy Putin a longer landing strip for future threats and incursions. But apart from the short-term conflict, not enough is said about the long-term stability that comes with peace. It's not just good for human health, it's good for the economy. Biden talked about the infrastructure that unites nations at peace. For example, the development of a rail corridor from Europe through the Middle East all the way to India. That's the alternative to pulling back. You know, if you pull back, we talked the other day about China ramping up more than $1 trillion of investments to help other developing countries with seaports, airports, other projects, and basically softening them up for a time when democracy might seem like a weaker alternative to Chinese-style authoritarianism. Here's how Biden summed it up. He said, "American leadership is what holds the world together. American alliances are what keep us, America, safe. American values are what make us a partner that other nations want to work with. To put all of that at risk if we walk away from Ukraine, if we turn our backs on Israel, it's just not worth it." And so that's why Biden is proposing an all-encompassing aid package for Congress to approve to show American commitment to troubled spots around the globe, not just Israel and Ukraine, but Taiwan and America's southern border, which, whatever you want to say about immigration, it does need better infrastructure to keep threats out and allow good people and commerce in. And finally, Biden not only spoke from the heart to Israelis and Ukrainians, he spoke to the victims of hate, discrimination, and suspicion right here at home, as he urged all of us to denounce anti-Semitism and Islamophobia. He said, "To all of you hurting, I want you to know I see you. You belong. You're all America." It's easy to fall prey to fear or to anger. It's hard, as the president said, to hold on to the values that make us who we are, a nation of religious freedom. And I think I need to repeat that again for certain people. We are a nation of religious freedom and freedom of expression. Biden noted, "We all have the right to debate and disagree. without fear of being targeted for harm. And I would add as well, not just is it easy to fall prey to fear or anger, it's easy to fall prey to fatigue and a desire to turn away, to which I would just want to say, don't. American leadership is about engagement. It's about commitment to our friends and to our values. And look, nobody's asking you to go to a war zone. Nobody's asking us to help clear away the rubble or to bury the dead. To do our part is to simply support America's leaders whose actions reflect our values, and to renounce those who would use this moment for partisan gain, who would pit one troubled nation against another, or purposely steer our government into gridlock rather than work to build bridges, both figuratively and literally. But unfortunately, there are still people in our nation's capital and elsewhere who would do just that. I'd love to have your thoughts on this as well. 844-967-2789. 844-967-2789. That takes us to the speaker's race. And we're going to talk a bit about that with Kia Vakil here coming up. But since Kia and I spoke, there had been a development in there where Patrick McHenry, the temporary speaker, is now threatening to resign as temporary speaker and create even more chaos in the House of Representatives as Republicans try to figure out who is going to be the 56th Speaker of the House. Jim Jordan still thinks he's going to put himself up there today for a third ballot, even though he lost ground in the second ballot yesterday and became the first speaker candidate to get fewer than 200 votes in 100 years. And the thing is, we don't even really know how many people are opposed to Jim Jordan, because it's being reported that among the people who despise him in his own party, they have agreed to stagger their no votes. So the no votes that you saw in the first ballot, that wasn't all of them. And then you notice there were a few more no votes in the second ballot. There's going to be more in the third. People who voted for Jordan the first time or two so that they could grow the gap and show Jim Jordan there is no way that he gets the speaker's chair. And yet, here he is attempting to browbeat and bully his own fellow Republicans to try to get to the chair. And I liked how somebody yesterday compared it to Kevin McCarthy, where Kevin McCarthy, when he was shamelessly debasing himself to get the speaker's job, was giving away things. He was making all kinds of concessions. You know, we'll allow just a single person to call for a vote to, you know, undo my speakership. We'll allow this. We'll allow that. He gave away all of these things. There's nothing else to give away. And so there's nothing that Jim Jordan can promise anybody, nothing he can give to them. And frankly, Jim Jordan's opponents don't want anything. They just don't want him. And so when you don't have anything to offer somebody, what's your alternative? Your alternative is to bully them, to sick Sean Hannity and Donald Trump on these folks. And look, there's two different kinds of Republicans in that caucus, some of whom are from safe districts because of gerrymandering. And then there's those who are in districts that are still close enough to purple. There's 18 of them where Joe Biden won their district, even as they got elected to Congress. And so there is no single block of Republicans that bullying is going to work with, because some of these people fear a primary challenger from the right, and some of them fear a primary challenger from the more moderate part of their party and of their district. So it's quite the soap opera that we're going to have today to see if Jordan actually goes through with a ballot, what the results are, how he reacts. What about this proposal to make Patrick McHenry, the temporary speaker, give him more power so that Congress can actually get some business done and pass this aid package. But there's enough Republicans there opposed to that, saying that that basically is, you know, that just means that Kevin McCarthy is still speaker, that he's kind of shadow speaker because he's the one that picked Patrick McHenry to be temporary speaker. So many twists and turns, and yet there's real work that needs to get done. And that's what I'm going to talk to Kia Vakil about coming up after this break. And then we'll have today's history lesson, a little music break. We'll talk to a candidate for Congress, Eric Wilson of Eau Claire, in our next hour as well. This is Up North News Radio. We'll be back. It's time for our weekly visit with Kia Vakil, political correspondent for Courier Newsroom, out in California, but monitoring things in Washington. And this week, monitoring things around the world. There's just so much to track everywhere, so much activity and so much inactivity in terms of progress toward a speaker's race. We don't know as we record this how things go, but we can certainly talk about the concept of a race that's taking forever and what's being lost in the process. Kia, how are you?
I am hanging in there, Pat. How about yourself?
What a fire hose of news this week, huh?
Yeah. I mean, a busy couple weeks.
It really has. So let's just look at what is at stake here, because Republicans have not been able to choose a leader from amongst themselves all this time. Obviously, we know things have blown up in Israel, but you had Ukraine before that and all the domestic stuff. There's a lot. Whenever a speaker or temporary speaker or something is chosen, I mean, these guys are really supposed to hit the ground running, right?
Yeah, I mean, to say nothing of obviously what's happening internationally, which is, you know, a huge deal. In the U.S., we are less than a month away from a government shutdown. There is a farm bill that needs to be negotiated that helps provide, you know, life-saving food assistance for 40 million people, provides farmers with crop insurance and all sorts of help. It's, you know, there's obviously funding for, you know, Ukraine and potentially for Israel, potentially humanitarian funding for Palestinians. There's a lot that's happening. And in Congress, nothing can actually get done because we are now on day 17 of Republicans being unable to elect a new speaker. They have just repeatedly tried and failed and moved farther away. And so where we're at is it's just like a total clown show right now.
It is. And of course, what really makes it what makes it funny in a sad way is how many of them continue to try to put some blame on Democrats when they're the ones in the majority, as they keep getting reminded by reporters. And look, if they're saying, well, all the Democrats and then just a handful of our members are conspiring against us, okay, fine. If you're going to consider those eight of your fellow Republicans, you know, their own thing, then maybe you ought to think about a coalition government and get a few Republicans to reach out to a few Democrats, God forbid.
Yeah, I mean, in a rational world, you would, you know, by this point, there would be actual movement towards either a moderate, there's a very few moderates left in the Republican Party, but a moderate Republican speaker, or empowering the House Speaker pro tempore, Patrick McHenry, who is not a moderate, but is also not one of the most far-right people, giving him temporary power to just get the basic function of government rolling again. And there have been Democrats who've said they're willing to do that. There are Republicans who are willing to do that. But there are more Republicans who, and including the ones currently running for speaker, like Jim Jordan, who don't want to do that, who think, you know, any sort of compromise with Democrats is akin to working with Satan. That's how they view it. And because of the incentives right now in the Republican Party, where most districts are not competitive, all you have to worry about if you're, you know, 90% of that caucus is winning your primary. And because of the way conservative media works, because for, you know, 15 years now, folks like, you know, Sean Hannity and Tucker Carlson and Rush Limbaugh and all those folks talked about Democrats as, you know, Satan worshiping pedophiles, which is obviously nonsense. No Republican can work with a Democrat without getting intense blowback from their base. And so there are people who are getting death threats because they won't support Jim Jordan. There are people who are afraid for their lives, and they still will not work with a Democrat because that's how afraid they are of their base.
We have come to as far a point possible away from John McCain's country before party.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't, and again, I hasten to add for folks listening who are not, you know, dyed-in-the-wool Democrats or independents, whatever you want to call it, nobody's saying that every rank and file Republican, every Republican voter out there, but there's something about the folks serving in Congress right now in the Republican Party who are frankly doing a disservice to all the moderate Republican voters that are out there. And I still agree that there are a lot of them. There's a lot of center-right voters, a lot of center-left voters. And they feel homeless right now politically.
Yeah. And I mean, the problem is if you are, let's say, a center right voter, if you're one of these, you know, voters, you know, who, you know, typically votes Republican and voted Republican last year, you know, for your, let's say your candidate, your congressperson is more moderate. There are some of them still. But voting Republican right now gets you Kevin McCarthy, gets you maybe Jim Jordan. That's the problem right now in the House Republican Party, at least. It's less of an issue in the Senate, where there's a few more reasonable, you know, Republicans willing to work across the aisle. But in the House right now, it's the far right wing that has control of everything. And a vote for a Republican, even if they appear moderate right now, is only empowering them, which is a problem. It's a problem for our democracy. It's a problem for those center-right voters who feel homeless. I don't envy them, but that's where things are right now.
And so now let's compare and contrast getting virtually nothing done in Congress versus somebody who is getting things done. President Biden, for the second time now, it has traveled into a war zone. That no other president has done that. Or a couple of different places in the world, you go into a war zone to build and bolster a coalition. What a difference it is to build things versus to spend your time tearing things down.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, you know, he has gotten a lot of criticism for his age. And I'm sure there are many other reasons he took that trip. He has obviously his own beliefs about what's happening in the Middle East. And the U.S. is trying to prevent this from becoming a huge spiral, because it's a very sensitive region right now. But, you know, he gets a lot of criticism for his age. Some of it may be fair, a lot of it not. But I think, you know, showing that you're traveling to war zones and, you know, really doing things and leading a government undercuts that in a compelling way.
Yeah, doing things, building things. And again, a lot to be said on that, but I just wanted to take note. We've spent so much time talking about Congress doing nothing that there is a president who's trying to get some things done. Now to the former president, where there was some news late in the week here for former President Trump. I guess we shouldn't say it was a total surprise that Sidney Powell decided to cop a plea and, you know, to testify against others accused of helping Trump try to subvert the election. But I'll admit, for as defiant as she sounded all the time, I was a little surprised by Thursday's news.
Yeah, I mean, I think reality sits in real fast when you're facing prison time.
Yeah, especially when it's one day before the start of your trial. Exactly. Right.
Yeah. And when you're, you know, Sidney Powell, no offense to her, is not, you know, the youngest individual. And so I don't know that if I were her, I'd want to spend, you know, my 60s in prison. I don't know her exact age, but that's a terrifying thought. And she, you know, they had her dead to rights. You know, she very clearly played a huge role in spreading election lies after 2020. And so, you know, she copped a deal basically, and she's going to testify at court proceedings against her co-defendants. Which suggests, you know, she could testify against Donald Trump. And that's a huge deal because she was among the most insidery people in that effort in Georgia.
By the way, I checked, she's 68. So she'd be looking at spending part of her 70s in jail. And then there was a newly discovered Kenneth Chesbro memo, because of his Wisconsin ties. We always want to say Cheesebro, but it's Chesbro. again, I don't know how many more smoking guns you need in this case, but a memo that says, yeah, there's only a 1% chance that this thing will work, but it will help Trump politically. I mean, that kind of gives away the game right there.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of the people who promoted the big lie and who actively worked to overturn the election knew better. They knew, one, he lost. Two, they knew it probably wouldn't work. But three, they were like, we literally had the, I don't remember who it was, someone anonymously saying, what's the harm in humoring him in, December 2020, that infamous quote that, aged like spoiled milk. They were putting politics above country, above democracy. And we saw the impact. Five people dead in an insurrection, hundreds of cops injured, dozens of people, hundreds of people with mental trauma as a result. The big lie, a lot of Republican voters still believe it. Donald Trump still spreads it. He's going to be the nominee again. That's the harm in spreading it. And people like Kenneth Chesebro, played a role in that, and they should have to, account for that and face justice.
And even as they do, we don't see that yet for the former president, despite again continuing this week to use violent rhetoric and I think directly trashed the military or military leaders, certainly more than any former president in American history. And the crowd at the rally laps it up, but I don't know that trashing America's military leaders is going to get you that far next year with, the people that aren't in his base.
No, you wouldn't think so. I mean, but this is nothing new for him. He said he liked people who weren't tortured. Has there's so many stories of this of Donald Trump, saying atrocious things about military members, about, civil servants, about everyone. And his rhetoric is getting exceptionally violent lately. He called for Mark Milley, who's the top military official, to be, pretty much suggested he should be executed, because he disagreed with some of his decisions. He has said, he has mocked Nancy Pelosi's husband, who was nearly killed in a brutal assault last year or earlier this year. I don't remember exactly on the timing of that, but and he's said some truly awful things. He's used rhetoric about, immigrants poisoning the blood of our country, which is straight up, Hitler level rhetoric. And I don't make that comparison lightly because that comparison is overused in our politics, but literally that's rhetoric that's almost identical to Mein Kampf. So, this is a man who is violent, is dangerous, and is going to have a 50-50 shot at being president in a year.
And part of that will depend, as presidential elections always do, on the economy. It was 1 year ago this week that there was a headline in Bloomberg News that said something along the lines of experts now predict with 100% certainty of a recession within the next year. Well, happy anniversary to that headline. Again, that one didn't age well. And again, say what you will about the Biden administration, but this economy coming out from the pandemic as well as it has, that does not happen by accident.
No. And to be clear, there is no recession. There have been issues, and there are issues. Housing costs a lot, childcare costs a lot. There's been some inflation, there's been some corporate greed. But by and large, when you look at where the US was in 2020, where it is now, when you look at where other major countries are now and where they were, the US recovery has been a miracle. We've basically returned to pre-pandemic trajectory. And that does not mean that there aren't issues. Like where I live, housing is out of control. Childcare is out of control. There are real problems that families are struggling with. But compared to where things could have been, we could have had another 2008 crisis. We don't have that. And I was young, but I remember seeing news headlines in that era of just how bleak things were. And we do not ha quite have that right now. And it's because the government, initially under Trump, the one thing I'll give him credit for is the CARES Act. And then really under Biden with the American Rescue Plan, the Infrastructure Law, the Inflation Reduction Act, they have invested in policies that are helping a recovery.
And that's where we'll leave it on more of an upbeat note. Kia Vakil, a national correspondent for Courier Newsroom. Great to touch base. Have a good weekend.
You too, Pat.
A lot of ground to cover there. And again, we'll look for any kind of an update from the balloting at the Capitol to see if there's a third go around. Do they try to hold a vote for speaker? If there's one thing that members of Congress love to do, it's to get out of Congress, get out of Washington, get to the airport and go home. So there's going to be a lot of people upset that they may have to stay for the weekend to continue to, do their job. So watch that. We've got shows throughout the Civic Media Radio Network throughout the day today that will be following events. You'll be able to call in with your thoughts on them as well. So please do so. When we come back, we're going to have today's history lesson, a little music break. What else are we going to talk about before we're all done here? Just looking at some of the news stories that are out today. Apparently, we're going to try to build, not we, but somebody in Wisconsin is going to try to build the world's largest grilled cheese sandwich. So that's on the way. And we'll also answer a text that came in during our interview with Kia about when did we last have a coalition government? All that and more still ahead. You're up north. This will be Lynyrd Skynyrd. One of my favorites. Sad day, however, in the history of Lynyrd Skynyrd. It was 46 years ago today that Ronnie Van Zandt and Steve Gaines died in a plane crash in Mississippi en route to Louisiana. Gaines' sister Cassie, who was a backup singer with the group, was also killed, along with two pilots and the band's manager. Other members of the group were badly injured, but would eventually reform. On this day in 1973, the Saturday Night Massacre, folks have been noting the story that I wrote for Up North News earlier this week, saying that what the Republican State Senate did this week to some of Tony Evers' appointees amounted to a political massacre. And this is the origin of the term. It was on a Saturday night in 1973 as Watergate was really getting hot and heavy. And Richard Nixon was finding out that, to use today's expression about fooling around and finding out, he was finding out and he wanted to prevent that. And so Nixon fired his attorney general, Elliot Richardson, and then he fired the deputy attorney general, William Ruckelshaus, because they each refused his order to fire the Watergate special prosecutor, Archibald Cox. So after Nixon fired his own attorney general for showing some integrity and his own deputy attorney general for showing some backbone, who did he find? Who was the wet noodle that he found who would fire the Watergate special prosecutor? That was United States Solicitor General Robert Bork, who a few years later would be nominated by Ronald Reagan for the Supreme Court. Democrats shot that down, noting the kind of person and the kind of record that Bork is and that Bork has. And Republicans have used it as a rallying cry ever since, using it as justification, for example, for basically stealing two Supreme Court seats over the past few years. But it all comes back to Robert Bork being the person willing to carry out Richard Nixon's Saturday Night Massacre. Would love to tell you that today is the 73rd birthday of Tom Petty. Unfortunately, he passed away in 2017, but we note the anniversary of his birth today in 1950. Other birthdays to tell you about today. Vice President Kamala Harris is 59 years old today. One of the reasons I liked her and I'm interested in seeing how she does is because, again, she's just a couple of weeks younger than me, and I'm not vice president. I'm probably in a happier place than she is these days, given what a pressure cooker DC is. Actor John Krasinski is 44 years old today. The number one song this day in 1979 was an instrumental by Herb Alpert. I believe it was General Hospital. This song was featured as part of a storyline in that soap opera, and it helped give the song a little bit of juice and push it to the number one spot this day in 1979. The U.S. Senate ratified the Louisiana Purchase on this day in 1803, greatly enlarging the size of the country and leading to talk of manifest destiny and such. On this day in 1818, there was a peace agreement signed between the U.S. and the United Kingdom, which settled the border between the U.S. and Canada, mostly along the 49th parallel. And again, for its time, it was a huge deal, a major bone of contention as to where that boundary would eventually be. And a compromise was finally worked out this day in 1818. Another case of you'd know the group, you've heard the song, but you don't know the guy, because we don't talk about lead singers a lot. A guy named Mark King turns 65 years old today. In England, he was born. You probably don't know Mark King, but you do know him as the lead singer of Level 42, and their one big hit. Let's keep things in the UK for our next historical item. Hard to believe that it's been a year now since Liz Truss stepped down as the Prime Minister of Great Britain, having served only 45 days before resigning, serving the least amount of time of any British Prime Minister. Sam, do you remember what it was? Because it seemed like she was going to be so endangered. Was it a head of lettuce that they had a webcam on and they were going to see which lasted longer, the head of lettuce or Liz Truss as prime minister? Do you remember that at all?
I don't. I got to say, I didn't even know her name. She must have not been prime minister for long enough for me to know.
She didn't. Again, 45 days. Came, went. It was kind of, it was in that Jim Jordan school where Liz Truss basically was like, well, I'm the next one in line. Not that she did a lot of the work to necessarily earn the role, but enough people said, yeah, I guess she's the one that's up. And then she proved herself not thoroughly capable of doing the job. And after 45 days, lost the confidence of her party. There is one more birthday to tell you about. Cortazar Calvin Brodus Jr. was born in Long Beach, California this day in 1971. You know him differently. Happy birthday to Snoop Dogg, who is 52 years old today. Now, normally I would cue Sam and he would hit a button and we would hear something from old Snoop Dogg, but I ran out of time yesterday to find something sufficiently clean that didn't need to be bleeped all over the place, especially one particular thing I wanted to play. It was when he was given a star on the Hollywood Walk of Fame. He gave he gave remarks that were rather kind of, I mean, they were funny at the time, but they've kind of become a bit, inspirational, where after, thanking a few people, he thanked himself. He said, I want to thank me for believing in me. I want to thank me for doing all the hard work. I want to thank me for having no days off. I want to thank me for never quitting. I want to thank me for always being a giver and trying to give more than I receive. I want to thank me for trying to do more right than wrong. I want to thank me for being me at all times, Snoop Dogg, you bad. And then he referred himself to something and then something and then something else. And there'd be so many bleeps, it wouldn't even be worth playing. But he at least gave us that quote, which I will admit at the time I laughed. It was November of 2018. But as I was looking through all the bio information on Snoop Dogg, people really look at that now and say, this is part of self-care. It's not necessarily, about being all full of yourself, but it is about being one of your biggest cheerleaders. And nobody can say Snoop Dogg didn't do that. By the way, Snoop Dogg came about, his parents called him Snoopy when he was little, apparently because of his resemblance to Charlie Brown's pet Beagle in the comic strip. But there you go. Snoop Dogg is 52 years old today. Coming up in our next hour, we'll talk to Eric Wilson, candidate for Congress. We'll talk to Mark Jacob about national media coverage and Jimmy Koska about high school football. All coming up next. You're up north.